My name's Randy Youngblood. I'm so glad that you're here, and also want to take a moment to welcome the people who are watching online, and we live streamed the service. So Angela, if you're watching down in Mexico, keep up the good work. We're glad that you're part of us down there. And those of you that are watching, we know that people watch several times online before they come, and we look forward to having you with us here someday. Well, at Thunder Mountain, we want to be people who are relentless in pursuing Jesus. And wherever you are in your life journey, in your spiritual journey, I think that's a characteristic. Whether you have come to faith to believe that Jesus is who he claimed to be or not, you're still here pursuing an understanding of Jesus. And for those of you that are Christ followers already, you're here because we want to hear from God, because we believe the more of our lives that we've turned over to God, the more of him flows out in our relationships with other people. And that's what we're looking at in this series. Last week, we looked at this verse, and we talked about the benefits of being quick to listen. And this week, we want to look at what do I do when it's time to speak? You know, those moments that it's time to speak up, how do we make the most of the opportunity? The principle that I want to share today, it's funny that oftentimes I know that there are, the messages grab me. I think, oh, this could be the most important message that I've ever spoken here. And yet, I know that this message is one that God has been speaking and building into my life for a couple decades now. And it's something very practical and useful and does have the potential to transform every interaction we have with everybody for the rest of our lives. Now, how is that for oversell? Bear with me, and you're going to see it's something very simple and practical and useful. Back when I was learning to apply this principle, one that we're going to look at today, one of the places was on the softball field. I was coaching little girls softball. I love coaching softball, and on this occasion, the girls were all 8, 9, and 10 years old, and it was in the division where they start to pitch. Now, if you know, I think it's called minors today, and you know what it's like when the boys and girls start to pitch. Those can be some really long games. And outs, when you get an opportunity for an out, if you don't seize it, it can be a very long inning. Well, on this occasion, there was something I need to tell you about. This strange little rule with softball, it's called the look-back rule. And if it wasn't for the look-back rule, it would never end. And that is where the pitcher gets the ball in the circle, she looks at the runner, and that runner immediately has to make a decision. She's either going to go all the way to the next base, or she's going to retreat to her current base, but she can't dance back and forth. And so on this occasion, my pitcher looked at the runner who was off second base. She took a few steps towards third, and then she went back and kind of hemmed and hawed, and then finally went back to the base. So I called timeout, went out to have a chat with the umpire. Now, instead of yelling at him or telling him what I thought, I just asked him a question. Are you going to call the look-back rule? Because if he would, the runner would be out, and we'd have one of those precious outs I was talking about. And so I asked him, are you going to call the look-back rule? And he said, nah, not at this age. And then as I turned to walk back to my dugout, I was thinking, how could I speak for his benefit? And so I just said this, if you do, we'll all go home sooner. And I just went back to my dugout. I hadn't taken two steps before I heard him yell, runner on second is out. And it's this principle that I'm going to look at today. It really works. I don't say it to mean you get what you want and you can get umpires into changing their minds. But there is something really powerful about the simple thing that I want to look at today. And the verse I want to look at today, we really unlocked a simple formula that helps in handling conflicts. It helps in interacting with umpires. It's been useful in times where, as parents, we had to call and talk to our child's teacher at school. About any time when it's time to speak, this principle is going to be useful. And so what we're going to look at today is another ingredient in our secret sauce. As we've been looking at our ingredients, we've been mixing up a secret sauce that we just call a recipe for healthy relationships. And the ones that we've looked at so far, we've talked about service, and that's where our hearts are turned outwards. My life for yours. Next was humility, where I lift your needs above mine. And then last week was genuine concern. And that is the principle that James shared, be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. This week, it's encouragement. And it comes from a letter that Paul wrote to a little church in Ephesus. And by the way, you can go to Ephesus and you can see the ancient city. They've discovered it, and archaeologists have been uncovering it now for several years. And it's amazing to be able to walk and see those places. But here's what Paul wrote to that little church years ago. He said in verse 29, "Do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen." So let's start with the first part, when he says, don't let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths. Now, for many of us, that means I can't cuss. I got to stop cussing. But it's a lot more than that. The word for unwholesome is the word for rotten, putrid fruit. And so when we think about unwholesome talk being like rotten fruit, it's like handing somebody fruit that looks like this. It would be beneficial to no one. Words, would you agree, can have a rotting effect. They can, when they're taken in, they're received, they can rot someone from the inside out. And Paul says very simply, don't let those words out of your mouth. Now, he doesn't state this, but he implies it. They may be in your head. And the truth is, you and I can't control. We can influence, but we can't control every thought that comes into our minds. But when a thought comes to our minds, we have the opportunity to decide whether or not to let it out. And Paul is going to give us some help in doing that. If the words in my mind would have a rotting effect if they came out of my mouth, Paul says, don't let it out. Don't let it out. Do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouth. So, what should come out? Well, here's what he says, the second part of the verse. And one of my favorite Bible study words is that little word but, and there's a contrast. So, in contrast to the words that should not be let out, he says, but only, meaning let these words out, only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs. Now, what's helpful? Well, the word here is, it's the opposite of unwholesome, obviously, but it means so much more than just good. Good is a word that could mean praiseworthy, that I could present it to God as an offering of praise and would bring him glory. But even more than that, there, inside of this word is the word for house. And so when it talks about building a house, it's not talking about building your own house. It's talking about building the house of the person you're talking to. Don't let the unwholesome talk out, but only let out what is helpful for building others up. Do you think about the weight of the responsibility of the words that you've spoken? When I was in sixth grade, there was a girl named Tammy, and Tammy was a girl that had a particularly round, white face. And I don't know why, but I thought it would be a good idea to give her a nickname. I called her Moonface. Now, I don't know where that came from, but no joke, a couple weeks ago, I was visiting my grandkids, and I read a Dr. Seuss book, and in the Dr. Seuss book were the words Moonface. So, it was something that I was somewhere in my mind, and I spoke them and assigned this nickname to Tammy. In 2011, keep in mind, she and I were no longer 11-year-old sixth graders. We were now 50 years old. In 2011, she reached out to me through Facebook, and she asked me a question. Do you remember me? Do you remember I was the one that you called Moonface back in sixth grade? And I was able to hear from Tammy how many years later, 40 years later, that year, sixth grade, was the worst year of her life. So out of 50 years, I was responsible for the worst year of her life because of some unwholesome talk that I had let out of my mouth. Now, I was able to ask for and receive forgiveness, but it didn't make that year any better, did it? After that year, she left the district, and she ended up graduating from a different high school nearby. But my words were like rotten fruit that I'd thrown and hit her in the face with. She heard those words when she looked in the mirror. She heard those words when she walked into school. She heard those words. They were a part of her house. And how I wish that I'd given her good fruit instead of rotten fruit. But that's the perspective of age and wisdom. And yet at that moment when we want to speak, when those words are burning on our tongue and we're thinking about how they would feel if we let them out, things get out of our mouths that have no business coming out. How I wish I had been a part of good building material in her life instead of termites. But they haunted her. Now, the words I chose were not for her benefit. They were for mine. Because I wanted people to laugh. I wanted people to think I was clever. I had moved into the district the year before, and I wanted to be accepted. And I felt good about the way that people laughed and thought that was a good nickname and that I had come up with it. But Paul would say, I shouldn't have let those words out of my mouth, and how I wish I could go back and change it. How have your words built others up? You may think of some times when you've spoken life into someone and they built a house that they wouldn't have built without your words. Or you can think about words that you'd spoken, usually when we're younger, and words that cause damage and were like releasing termites that get behind into the wood. And things may look good on the outside as someone's smiling and appears to be laughing along, but inside they're dying. Well, there's something else that Paul said. He said we should speak words according to the needs of the other person. I didn't do that. But how do you know when they're spoken for the needs of the other person? Well, I think that's where James says, be quick to listen. The only way you and I are going to be able to understand or figure out what needs somebody has will be to listen and to learn. What does his house need? What does her house need? Lack. How can my words supply it? You probably know what your literal house needs. The house Kim and I live in, I think, is 30 years old this year, and we have a list in our minds of the things that we want to do. It's going to cost a lot of money, and it's probably going to be like buying the house over again. You think, what's the point? But the point is, we all know the needs of our own houses, and what Paul is saying is that before we speak, we need to know what the needs of the other person will be. And ask the question, if I let out what I'm thinking, will my words build up? Will my words be constructive? Or will my words cause rot, like releasing termites inside the walls? So how do I know what's helpful? In the teaching team this week, we were wrestling with this, and they said, Randy, you've got to give them something practical. They're going to want to know, okay, what is helpful? How do I know? And as I wrestled with this and prayed about this, this is what I came up with. If you want to know what's helpful, ask the question, if I say what I'm thinking of saying, will that other person ever thank me? Will the other person ever want to say thank you? And when I say thank you, not just for what is spoken, but for how it's communicated as well. Will the other person ever want to say thank you? So far we've talked about don't let the rottenness out of our mouths, but only for what is useful for building healthy households in others. So only speak what is beneficial, helpful for building others up according to their needs. Paul went on and he said that it may benefit those who listen. There are a lot of reasons to speak. And a lot of them center on what people will think of me as the speaker. I mean, it's always tempting, and I know when I go down the road of sermon mode rather than message mode, and I try to put it in reverse and realize that I'm speaking words of life. It's not about what people think of me or what they think of the message. And the same thing when you and I speak in public, when we talk to people, there's often the thought, if I'm in a meeting, how will it impact my career? How will it gain me friends? How will it? And a lot of the times before we speak, the thoughts are very much centered on me, how it will benefit me. But Paul says that's the wrong focus. He says the focus is on the benefit of those who listen to what you have to say. And you and I get to decide whose benefit we're seeking. We know whose benefit we're seeking when we laugh at someone else's expense. When we're speaking to get a laugh at someone else, they little concern is given to whether they're laughing or not. It's the people who will think more highly of us or who are laughing along with us. But the truth is, someone may laugh on the outside, but inside they're already starting to rot because of the words that we've spoken. James Denny said this: no one can give the impression that he or she is clever and at the same time that Christ is mighty to save. We can't exalt ourselves and exalt Jesus at the same time. And if you're a Christ follower, this is really important. And it's not like, okay, let me exalt Jesus later. Right now, I want to exalt myself. I want people to think this about me or that. But you and I get to decide. And Paul says that when we speak, it needs to be for the benefit of others. And as Christ followers, we recognize one of the greatest benefits that we can give is that someone would come, as we say here at Thunder Mountain, to know, love, and serve Jesus. And so if I'm speaking some words that are designed to cause people to think something good about me, I got to ask the question, am I also exalting Jesus? When I was in sixth grade, it's very clear I chose to speak for my benefit, and I ignored Tammy's. It felt good at that time. It felt good when I saw people's reaction. It felt good every time someone laughed and said, hey, that's a really good name you gave her. But it's my shame now. And that's the thing. When you and I are deciding at that moment, do I let these words out? What makes you and I feel good immediately is unlikely to be what makes us feel good ultimately. So we can either feel good ultimately or immediately, but unfortunately, it's seldom both. That's the thing. When we looked last week, when the speaking horse rushes out of the gate or the anger horse is first one on the scene, it's usually almost always for my benefit and considering my needs, because in order to speak for the benefit of the other person, I've got to do what first? I've got to listen. Be quick to listen. So what makes you and I feel good immediately doesn't make us feel good ultimately, and that's the rub. The challenge is to speak words of life that have an eternal benefit rather than just speak words in the moment that will have instant, immediate gratification but will cause us to have regrets and shame later. Remember last week, human anger doesn't produce the righteousness that God desires. Anger that results in my needs or my rights or how I feel when it's about me doesn't produce the life that God desires, and it doesn't produce a life that exalts Jesus and shows him as mighty in any way. Quick to anger, quick to speak, only consider my immediate needs. Now, the principle here is a responsibility. Because when you and I exercise rights, we very well may have the right to blow our tops. We very well may have the right to speak in a way that says, I'm angry and I want you to know it. I want you to feel what I feel. And yet it's like the images I've used a couple of the last few weeks. It's like surrounding ourselves with mirrors that regardless of what the other person's feeling, thinking, or doing, it's all about me. The look was about me. The words were about me. The actions were about me, and I didn't deserve it, and I need to teach a lesson. But the principle here is that even when we have the right or authority, we need to exercise our responsibility to put the needs of the other person ahead of ours. Because don't do what you can get away with. Because you may have been exalted to a position where people can't question you, can't challenge you. So where are you going to find the humility to be able to behave appropriately? In parenting, you may feel good, and you may feel good about giving a piece of your mind, but long-term, the outcome won't be good. But you've already let it out of your mouths. To be able to speak in a way that the person who's listening actually benefits rather than just feeling good that I've done my responsibility by saying what needed to be said, let's instead look at what can be communicated for the benefit of the other person. It affects parenting. Being able to let go of your rights for a moment, instead of just saying, I'm mad and I want you to understand what you've done is wrong, but to be able to speak for the benefit of the other person. See, when we do that, when we let out the termites, we start a cycle. And the cycle is that I am going to fight for my rights, and if you've hurt me, I'm going to hurt you back. But the cycle is this. People who are hurt go down the line and hurt other people. Counselors say this way, hurting people hurt other people. And that goes on from generation to generation. There are sins within each of our families that aren't things that we've been taught, but they're things that we've caught, and they become reactions to situations that we've learned instinctively. And the only way we're going to stop it is to be quick to listen, and when we speak, to learn to speak for the benefit of the one we're speaking to. You see, we got to ask the question, are the words I'm about to use, do they reveal God? Do they reveal God? Do they glorify Him? See, the other part is the words that we receive become a part of us too. Each of us receive words that become termites and that eat away at our souls, and we have the responsibility to only receive what God says is true. The evil one will hand you things that are true about you, and yet recognize that the motive of the evil one is not to build up, but it's to divide and it's to deceive. When the evil one hands you something that's true about yourself, we talked about this many times, including a couple years ago when we talked about fear no evil, spiritual warfare, that when we accept partial truth from the evil one, he's going to use it to separate us, to divide us, and he's going to cause us to condemn ourselves because he's going to apply what is true in a way other than what God intended. When the Spirit of God speaks, he will bring conviction, not condemnation. And when he speaks truth, it's to set free, not to enslave. But every one of us has received words from people that cause us to react and hurt others, that we need to stop that cycle. And we have the power to do that. Paul said, in verse 15 of chapter 4 to the Ephesian church, instead, speak the truth in love. And he says, growing in every way more and more like Christ. So look what's implied. If we speak what is true and we do it with a motive of love, as we do that, we're going to become more and more like Jesus. Jesus is going to be living through us. We're going to have healthier relationships, and we're going to build healthier people around us. You see, many people are truth people. They can let the truth fly, and they don't care where it lands. There are people who want the truth declared, and they, like a flamethrower, just walk away and let people just burn as they are burned to a crisp. And yet there are also love people. Love people often ignore the truth because it's inconvenient or they're afraid that it hurts. Very few people are both, but when we are both, when we speak the truth in love, we become more like Jesus, because that's who Jesus was. And Jesus said, my Father desires worshipers who worship in spirit and in truth. Love means I speak what is true in a way that benefits the other person. That benefit can be received. It may be hard truth, but it's presented in a way that will cause that person to feel loved. Speaking the truth, I say it this way. This is how I repeat it, ask myself. Speak the truth in love for the benefit of the other person. To me, this is how I summarize those two verses. So, how do we know it's time to speak? Well, ask this about the words that are on your mind or on your tongue. Is it true? Is what I'm going to say true? Is it beneficial? Is it time? Is it needed? So is it true? Is it beneficial? Is it time? Is it needed? Another way to ask the question is, am what I'm thinking about saying, is it what Jesus would say? Is it what Jesus would say? Is it how Jesus would say it? And then the element of time, is this when Jesus would say it? Because he wasn't just about truth. He's the embodiment of truth, but he's also love. So to say what Jesus would say, the way Jesus would say it, at the time Jesus would say it, is the embodiment of truth and love. Speaking the truth in love for the benefit of the other person is a great filter. So how might that look? It's going to affect how you and I use humor. We know what it's like to get people laughing for our benefit, and sometimes we use other people for that benefit. Laughing with or laughing at, those are two very different things. And then having the emotional maturity to see that if someone is laughing with, but be able to tell, are they laughing on the or crying on the inside? Sarcasm. There's probably nothing else that I talk about that I get more pushback than sarcasm, because some of you, you have a reputation of great wit and a sarcastic tongue. But be careful. Be careful. Because it's important that we speak honestly. And oftentimes, sarcasm is taking a criticism that we otherwise wouldn't say for whatever reason and wrapping it up in humor. Where did it come from? It's often like hiding a rock inside of a cookie and laughing when someone breaks their teeth. The Bible says that we have a good, good father who gives only good gifts to his children. Which of you, if your child asked you for a loaf, would give them a snake and laugh about it? And yet oftentimes sarcasm is that very thing. It's hiding, it's using humor to hurt. It's using humor to say what otherwise we can't figure out how to say it in love, so let's say it in laughter. Be careful with sarcasm. There's a proverb that says, like a maniac shooting flaming arrows of death, and that can be a picture of words, flaming arrows of death. Like a maniac shooting flaming arrows of death is one who deceives his neighbor and says, ha, I was only joking. Well, were you or not? You delivered the punch, and then you're saying it shouldn't hurt. I was only joking. We got to be careful about gossip. With gossip, I'm convinced that very few people actually think that they're gossiping. We want to be people who speak to people, not about them. Am I honoring the person I'm speaking about, or am I speaking to someone who isn't a part of the problem, where they can't make a solution out of it? They're not a part of the problem or a part of the solution. If they're not a part of the problem or the solution, why am I having a conversation about this? Because gossip usually doesn't benefit the person being spoken to or the person being spoken of. Prayer requests can be dangerous. And this is where Christians have to be careful. Prayer requests, the Bible says that if I confess my sin and you pray for me, I can find healing. But it doesn't say that if I confess your sin to someone else that you will find healing. Confessing my sin and only my sin. Am I revealing something through this prayer request that isn't mine to reveal? Don't turn in prayer requests that reveal other people's sin. Even though you believe in the power of prayer, it crosses some boundaries that aren't healthy. Sometimes prayer requests are shared in a way that become very gossipy. Political discussions and social media. We talked last week how political discussions don't need to be divisive. When we listen, rather, give up the idea you're going to change anyone's mind. Secondly, if you want to know why they think what they think, ask them. But don't do it as a setup to deliver a punch or a low blow. Say, hey, tell me how you arrived at this position. Tell me why you support that candidate. Tell me. Help me see through your eyes what you see. You see, oftentimes, discussions like this, things that are posted on social media, we assume that the people they're about never see them, and that's not true. You see, I remember one time being sent a video of a sermon of a pastor criticizing another pastor in his church. I knew the pastor being spoke of. I'd read books, I'd heard him speak, and I knew he was being misrepresented. But why? Because oftentimes in church, purity of doctrine, we feel that there's a license to assassinate the characters of people who see things differently than us. Those are truth people, not love people. And so I thought, why? Why is he misrepresenting this brother in order to criticize him in front of his church? For whose benefit? It wasn't for his brothers. It wasn't for his church. It was selfish. Until you and I can say, whatever we say about another person, it's said like we're saying it to them, and they need to be able to say, yes, yes, that's what I think. And until they can say, yes, that's what I think, we're misrepresenting them and we have no business speaking because it's not for their benefit. Be a student of other people. If we're going to speak for the benefit of others, it requires being a student. And this means a spouse or a child, a coworker, a boss. I wish I had done a better job of this as a young husband and as a young father. I was slow catching on. But to be a student of others is the only way we're going to be able to speak for anyone's benefit other than our own, because we have to understand what the benefit is. My latest growth area is that with companies. I used to see companies as things, not people. It's the same way we do when we're driving and we criticize drivers because we're criticizing a car, not a person. And then we find out, oh, that person goes to church with me, and then all of a sudden we backtrack. But companies, I used to see companies as things. I used to act like excellent service was a right, not a privilege. This last week, I just got to tell you what's been going on the last couple weeks. I was out in New Jersey. I contracted bronchitis, which turned into asthma, which I needed a second round of antibiotics, which caused a really painful hip condition where I can't stand right now. And I needed to go to patio pools and get the water tested. Kim had been TDY, and she's coming home on Monday, so I was needing to get some things done before she got home. And so I went to patio pools to get my water tested, and they were busy like crazy. And it hurt to stand. And all these old thoughts went through my mind. You don't deserve this. Just leave. If they're not providing better service than this, just walk out. And yet I didn't initially, and then another thought came into my mind. Just go ahead and have a seat and wait. Now, I did. I sat down at the counter, and I sat there, and I prayed. It hurt, and I wanted to leave, and yet there's something that overcame those feelings that said, just sit here and wait. And what felt like a long time really was a short amount of time, because then the young gal named Carissa, it's the same name as our youngest daughter, came up. And she said, thank you for your patience. Had I been patient? Not really. But I didn't let those words or those feelings out of my mouth, so she didn't know the difference. And what was released, she saw as patience. And I was blessed to be a blessing. Would I have been a blessing if I'd let any of those other feelings out? No. Would I have been justified? Maybe. But I was glad I didn't. And it was worth the pain of sitting there to feel her being blessed by my kindness. I went into Home Depot because there was something I needed to fix. And I am terrible at fixing things. And so it was later in the evening, and they only had one register open. And there was a person ahead of me that was, I don't know what the problem was taking forever. And it hurt to stand. And so I look around thinking about leaving, but I really need to buy these things. And so then I turn and I see a pile of wood there on a cart. And something says, just sit down and wait. So I did, and I prayed, and I breathed through it. And pretty soon another worker came up and said, hey, sir, I'm sorry for this inconvenience. I can take you at this other register. And he opened another register. And I don't know where these words came from because they weren't what I'd been feeling, but they were what came out. I said, you know, if I hadn't hurt myself, it would have been no inconvenience at all, and it's not your fault. You see, when we speak words of grace, we speak words of blessing. We build others up. And when we keep those other words inside, we stop the damage before it's done. And I was so glad that I had done that. Both times I felt so good. I even felt better when I went back to Home Depot the next day because I needed something else, and that same guy was there. He remembered me. And he smiled. And you and I can decide. We get to decide what we're going to be remembered for. We're either going to be remembered for the words of blessing or the curses. But speaking the truth in love for the benefit of the other person has been a really helpful filter that makes relationships healthier and allows you and I, when we do it, to build a legacy as people builders rather than termite givers. We end the cycle. We help end the cycle of causing hurting people who will hurt other people. Instead, we cause people to be blessed, which passes on a blessing. Somebody was here last night and told me about a story going to the grocery store. He said, as happens when you go in the stores at night, the registers open are few and the lines can be long. And he said people, the line was long, it was slow, and people were being irritated and impatient. And he said, before I gave voice to any of that, I remembered the message, and I just struck up a conversation with the irritated lady behind me. And he said, pretty soon, it would just change the atmosphere completely. It's amazing what God can do when we give voice to his spirit. We can end the cycle of hurting people, hurting other people, and we can also begin to replace our regrets before they happen with joy. And I think most importantly, we can demonstrate, we can show, we can give, we can reveal a Jesus who is mighty to save.